how sick did you get of the rest of the crew? I mean, you did it for years, and it went on and on. It could still go on.
Yeah, well, we only did it for 6 weeks of the year. That's a very small amount of time. And I don't know, it was like going on holiday again, meeting all your, you know, the friends you usually meet on the cruise or whatever, you know, and then it's all goodbye afterwards. Oh, we'll definitely keep in touch. Oh, definitely. Leave me your address. Oh, yeah, give me a ring.
Does it annoy you when people tend to forget that you've actually played some very serious parts you've played Shakespeare?
No, it doesn't. This medium I live in is very ephemeral. It's gone like that, and that's how it should be. Yesterday's performances are gone. It's tomorrow. It's the now that comes. Not yesterday, not what you did yesterday. It's all over. You see what is particularly good is to see other old films on television, and you see the ones that stand up, which are extraordinary. Really are, must be extraordinary. And you see the others that were marvellous in their time, but are completely and absolutely dated. They don't mean a thing anymore.
Well, yesterday may be over, but I mean, yesterday when you were young, it was a very bad childhood, wasn't it? Poor, you know.
Yeah, but I'd like to skate away from that, because I've seen a lot of things on the television lately about the 30s. It looks as if most of us are just staggered out of the salt mines. You know, I mean, we laughed a lot. Honest to God, we laughed in the 30s. We really did when we were young. You know, we had a tough time. We had not much food about. You know?
It wasn't, as we're seeing it now, the nostalgia.
Non-stop laugh it was, you know. People were like that. I mean, there's nothing they could do about it. So they just laughed all day long.
Because the reason I was going to ask you is, you know, does this present period we're entering, where the prophets of doom say, you know, we're on a crash course and inflation is going to kill us off and all that, is this how it was in the 30s?
Yeah, only more so. Absolutely. Hopeless. Mm-hmm. Hopeless. And the only thing that saved us was the war.
In what way?
Gave people money, gave them jobs. Mm-hmm. Most of it was spent on armaments. That is the tragedy. That is the real tragedy of today. Is that going to be the solution again? That we all start working in armaments for another war?
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Likes of Us podcast with me, your host Neil Bradley, dedicated to working class life, art, politics and culture. Okay, it's Tuesday night, early April, and you find me once again back in deepest, darkest Bermondsey, even though the sun is still shining and will be for another hour or so, 40 minutes. Millwall tonight taking on Leicester City, who sit at the top of the Championship, and Millwall 2 points off the relegation zone. We're about 5 games to go now, and you have to think it's looking grim, even though I think for the last 5 years or so anything to do with Millwall has looked grim. So obviously this is only my second game down at the Den for a long time, since the start of the 100 day cough. I'm not holding my breath for anything exciting. I'm not expecting a win tonight, but it's good to get back in the saddle again with the old recorder. Now I hope you enjoyed last week's episode of the Likes of Us podcast, episode 180, as they say on the darts. Apologies again for the sort of erratic nature of that particular episode, but hopefully it's given you some idea of what's been going on in the world of this particular podcaster for the last 4 or 5 months or so. The mad world I seem to find myself in. Illness, artistic juices flowing, and a cough that lasted 3.5 months. So just arrived at the ground now. I don't hang around. I'm not expecting to see anybody I know. I'll be straight in, get myself a nice cup of tea and get up to my seat, because by the time I get up to my seat at the top of the West Stand at Millwall, I'm pretty worn out and pretty breathless, still suffering from that particular aspect of the 100 day cough, or long COVID as I like to call it. So if anything happens, I'll give you more. Otherwise, I'll give you more later. Cheers. Okay, for the second time in 5 days, you find me back in deepest, darkest Bermondsey for another Millwall match, Millwall versus Cardiff, with Millwall having the incentive of a win today pretty much guarantees our survival and ensures another season in the second division, now of course known as the Championship. So even though I'm in deepest, darkest Bermondsey, the sun's shining. It's nice and warm-ish. So I'm just taking a stroll from New Cross Station. Now, when I was walking home from the Leicester game on Tuesday night, from that last clip, which Millwall won 1-0 in typical Millwall style, the week previously they'd lost to the bottom of the table side, and then they go and beat the top of the table side in that typical schizophrenic way of theirs, which we've sort of become so used to over the years. As I say, as I was walking home from the ground, making my way back to New Cross Station, in the dark, come across like Fulham Park or Deptford Green, and it's like bandit territory. I mean, it's always been pretty rough in Deptford and around New Cross. It's always been a little bit salubrious, you know, but I was sort of rushing along, hoping to not miss the train, because the last thing you want to do on a Tuesday night is be anywhere near New Cross, anywhere near Goldsmiths, because it reminds me too much of work. And you come out of the park and you cross the road and there's like a foot tunnel that goes underneath the railway lines. Mill supporters making that same journey as me will be familiar with it. Now, as I'm sort of approaching the foot tunnel, three like young guys, black guys, come charging out wearing balaclavas. And then as I step into the foot tunnel, it turns out they're being chased by a gang of about 20 of these like young kids in balaclavas, all carrying machetes and zombie knives and swords, who run sort of straight past me. And it was somewhat surreal, the situation. And then they've chased these other kids into the park, and it just sort of got me thinking really about like life today, you know. There are all these sort of like weird parallel fucking universes where all this stuff is going on the periphery of you, and it's all really real, and you're kind of oblivious to it, or blinkered to it, thankfully. And the more I think about it, the more it reminds me very much of some of the places I've been to in America, where you can walk a few blocks and there are billionaire apartments, and then you can cross a road and you're sort of in the Bowery, you know. And it's that little bit in the middle where it all becomes a little bit ragged. You know, the irony of it is, in these places, New Cross, you can't buy an house for, you know, less than like £2 million. So it seems very odd, you know, the fucking ghetto, as it's described, which I always find really offensive, that description. And it's like a self-penned description as well by all these little fuckers, you know. They're big on the ghetto, but pointed out, I mean, I've had to point it out to people in work, you know, you can't have a ghetto when you can buy an house for £2 million. It's fucking ludicrous. And don't buy into it, you know, don't give them the fucking oxygen of that fanta. So, yeah, it was just like a surreal way to end the evening, really, you know. And I got the train home to Eltham, and I walked home along a quite a little street, and thought to myself, thank fuck, I live here, you know, and not there. It's always been an argument I've had at Goldsmiths ever since I first started there, back before the millennium, with like all the Right On Brigade, you know, and the Liberati, who have got this very like weird view of Goldsmith and the surrounding area in terms of it being sort of, I don't know, like edgy and urban, and they hold a lot of very romantic view of it, which I've never understood. And I've always tried to point out to him, it's like a shithole, you know. Constantly clogged with traffic around a one-way system. Grimy. You know, you've got to come out of the station and it's fucking full of, like, never-do-wells, you know. Fucking skagheads and fucking people will hit you over the head and nick your pension. So I'm just walking under a tunnel now, which leads to Coldblow Lane, which is very salubrious indeed. I always think back to the good old days when Mill was at the old ground. What it must have been like for an away supporter walking this route to get to the stadium and thinking, what the fucking hell have I come to here, you know? in some ways it's sort of very like northern, you know, like very like northern industrial. But yeah, it's a strange part of London. I mean, most of London now is a strange part, a fucking strange part of London. And most of us are glad we've managed to get out to the peripheries. On the podcast last week, you know, walking along in the company of all the white flight brigade. And, but now I think that's sort of changed. I think it's now just like, you know, like sort of decent working class people, regardless of what colour skin you are, that all want to escape. You know, I've got like West Indian friends and colleagues who've got exactly the same fucking fears and anxieties as I have, come from that same sort of era as me. Yeah, it's like a shithole, you know. So, it's put me in a good mood, isn't it, for a football match today. But, there you go. So, I'm coming up to Coldblow Lane now, and then I'm going to cut through this, like, grubby fucking Barrett's, like, housing estate, which is well past its sell-by date, despite those glossy adverts and that bloke flying in on an helicopter. And I'll soon be at the den and let the misery begin once again. So if anything happens, I'll give you more. But until then, I'll give you the more in a while. Cheers. Okay, just walking home from the station now. After my visit at the deepest darkest Bermondsey, Mill running out 3-1 winners in a sort of very enjoyable game in the sunshine. I said previously, you know, I've sort of lost my mojo a little bit when it comes to Mill, but the last couple of games have sort of lifted me spirits once more. I'm still not fully committed, even though I've committed the near £500 to renew the season ticket for another year of misery down the den. Just looking forward to getting in now. These days it takes me a lot of effort to just get up and get motivated and leave the house. Unless it's cool, of course, to go up the pub for a couple of pints in the company of all the over 70s, sitting there with me tankard, talking about the war. So, as I was coming back through the park, no zombie knife wielding gangs today to report, thankfully. But of course, over to my right in the distance is the big squiggle that sits atop the arts building at Goldsmiths College. Now, opening in the news this week, there was a Guardian article which I couldn't make head nor tail of, very poncy indeed, but talking about the state of the college, the financial problems they find themselves in, and it all seems to have gone to hell in a handcart, you know. I think in higher education, especially at a place like Goldsmiths, we're reaching that sort of like perfect storm now, where it's all gone fucking pear-shaped. It obviously comes through a lack of government funding, but you could also say there's a bit of financial mismanagement on behalf of the college themselves. So they announced a couple of months ago that they're going to have compulsory redundancies, and that will total 132 jobs or more, because a lot of the staff that they plan on getting rid of are part-time. So in effect, if it's a full-time job, they'll probably be getting rid of 2 staff members. And in departments that are really like art and humanities departments, which the government are not too keen on funding, including my old Department of English and Comparative Literature at Goldsmiths. I mean, in some respects you could see, you could think they're getting everything they deserve, just because of like the bizarre nature of academia and the, like, you know, especially with like the woke shit, you know. It can be a difficult place to work sometimes in terms of those who come from working class backgrounds. I think most of us feel completely fucking alienated from both the college and our academic colleagues. They've definitely not lived the same lives of us as us. Yet they all seem to be experts in our lives, and they all seem to be really good at pointing out where we've gone wrong, which I think was definitely the case after the Brexit referendum. And the reality is, they think that we're all knuckle-drugging, fucking racist oiks, you know. Exhausted some days. I mean, I've had lots of arguments in my time at Goldsmiths. These days I tend to bite my tongue a little bit more and don't say anything at all because it always fucking escalates. But most days I go in and walk around the corridors and I'm just shaking my head, you know. Partly because I don't recognise anybody anymore. And partly because it seems to have like changed out of all recognition, even though it's the place I know so well and, you know, a place that I've worked for 25 years, a quarter of a century, which always amazes everybody that knows me, because prior to being at Goldsmiths, I never managed to hold down a job for more than a few years. And I always happened getting a sack, you know, for opening my big mouth and having arguments. And now I've sort of eased into this job. I mean, I've been fortunate enough that my boss, Joe Baden, came along and saved me years ago and got me a job working with him, doing something that I'm pretty good at, something that most days I like. I'm not sure how I would survive if I was still back doing like a boring fucking admin job. I think I would be rowing every day and probably taking hostages, you know. But the reality is now, I'm of an age where I'm just trying to get to fucking retirement, you know. And it was interesting, some weeks back we was doing a sort of like a philosophy class and we were talking about exactly that, about class. And a colleague pointed out, a middle class colleague pointed out, well really, you know, you could really be middle class. You've got a professional job, you're a manager, you own your own house, you've been to university. And I pointed out the fact that regardless of all those things, like my life, as well as the lives of the people around me, are still really precarious. And we might have all of the trappings of a middle class lifestyle, but the reality is if you lose your job, within 3 months, you'd be looking at selling your house just to fucking get by, you know. And that's the difference between us and them. We haven't got 5 or 6 generations of wealth to fall back on or to put us on our feet in the first place. You know, most of us have become relatively comfortable in life, much later in life, and hence like the precarious nature of our existence. So any talk about redundancies and job cuts always sends a shiver down my spine, even though, as I say, I keep my mouth shut. I wait for the day when they put my name on the list and then I'll have to row it in. So I've just reached home. I was all buoyant earlier on, having watched Millwall win 3-1. Now I'm all miserable again. I'm going to go indoors and have a nice cup of tea and put my feet up. I'll give you more in a while. Cheers. Okay, you find me on a Tuesday afternoon, making my way back home from the station after just having been to Goldsmiths for a class today, which was already great. Now, I'm hoping to get home before the heavens open up, because up ahead of me, up in the sky, it looks like the end of days. We've just come through like a howl storm on the train, which seemed to batter the train, and I was contemplating spending an hour standing in the station, too scared to leave in case I get struck down by a golf ball sized hailstone. So last night I was at the local Methodist church just down the road from me, and I was rehearsing for a concert with my local choir that I've joined. My life seems to get more and more bizarre by the week. So last Monday I was standing in someone's kitchen trying to match a painting with the colour of their cupboard doors. Last night, a week to the day, I'm in a Methodist church singing "What Shall We Do With a Drunken Sailor?" As I say, my life gets weirder and weirder as I enter that third stage, you know, that third act of my life, so to speak. Now, last summer I joined a choir in work, which was sort of being run for like staff well-being, for which I've always taught a creative writing class. You know, me, you know, you've listened to this podcast enough times, I'm always encouraging people, if an opportunity arises, to do something, especially of a creative nature, that you should sort of grab it with both hands. Just to say that, the heavens, you can probably hear the thunder. I think I'm going to get drowned any moment now. So I'm just going to put my recorder in my pocket in case it fills up with water. So the choir's been going for some years now in work. Plenty of people have asked me to join and I've always been reluctant. And then I went along and I said I'd give it a go because they were sort of short of people with deep voices. And I went along, and what I discovered, that it was really joyous. And I've been going back ever since. And then, late last year, a guy from the pub, who is a plumber, he came to my house to fit a radiator on the wall. And we got chatting, and he said he was in a local choir, just up the road from where I live. And he said, you should come along, he said, because there's not many men there. It's mainly women, and they could do with a few more men to join. And I said I'd come along, which I did, for a sort of like a taste that evening. And it was really nice, everyone was really friendly, and I really enjoyed it. I've been going back ever since. And then this Saturday now, a culmination of this term, we have a concert in a church at Bexley Heath. Five different choirs singing, there's some like school choirs and a chamber orchestra. And we'll be doing five songs as part of our like community choir, and I'm really looking forward to that. So last night we was rehearsing for the big day. Oh, it's fucking hailstones now, fucking pissing down with rain. I'm gonna try and keep the audio going because you know me, I'm a trooper if nothing else. So yeah, went along to that, had a good old sing song. I'll give you a little taste of it at the end of this little clip. And again, as I said to anybody, if you get an opportunity to do this stuff, you should do it. Don't worry about what other people think about you. You might just enjoy it. You never know. I certainly do. I certainly get a lot of pleasure from it. It's definitely something different to do. Anyway, I'm going to stop the recording now because my microphone's getting all wet. What a fucking nightmare. Okay, I'll give you more in a while. Cheers.
What shall we do? 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 With the trumpet.
Okay, I think that's it for another episode of the Likes of Us podcast for this week. Hope you enjoyed it. Short and sweet this week, but I hope you found it interesting all the same. I'll speak to you all again next week after my triumphant concert with the choir. In the meantime, think of us, think of the likes of us, and think of that poor old drunken sailor who was put in the scuppers and had the hose pipe turned on him. Speak to you all next week. Cheers.